Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I listen to The Black Guy Who Tips because Rod and Karen are hot.
Hey, welcome to another episode of The Black Guy Who Tips podcast. I'm your host, Rod, joined as always by my co-host,
Karen.
And we are live on a Tuesday.
Yes,
Ready to do some podcasting. Find us everywhere you get podcasts. Okay, that's what we're doing. The official weapon of the show is
the phone chair
and the unofficial sport,
bullet ball
and bullet ball extreme. And today we're not alone.
No,
we got a very special guest, first time on our podcast.
Yes,
but we actually was on the Keith and the Girl marathon with this guy a couple years, like last year. Mm-hmm. He is a comedian. He's an actor. He's host of the Inconsistent Podcast. It's Rob Hayes. His new special, Frontin', is out on YouTube right now. What's going on, Rob?
Man, doing well. Happy to be here. You know, I've heard legendary things about the Black Guy Who Tips. So, you know, been waiting on this day for a long time. Happy to be here with y'all.
Thank you, sweetie.
Oh, man. We appreciate it, dude. We're fans of yours. Mm-hmm. We literally, right before we came in here, was watching the special, Frontin'.
Okay.
It's like, we got like 10 minutes left, but we was watching it. We was enjoying it. We was having a good time laying down. Was this your first stand-up special or do you have
first special, second album?
The first
project was just audio, Hazopedia, still available on all streaming platforms, and so this is the second album, but the first special, people like to see you. You know, I'd rather not be seen. I'd rather people just listen to me and watch something else, look at a painting, you know, close their eyes or just, you know, go outside or something, walk around. I'd rather that. But, you know, people want to see you. So I was like, all right, let me give them something to look at.
Yeah, I don't know how you got into, like, stand-up, but I know as a kid and a young adult, I was like, I'm always been a fan of stand-up. And I just remember having stand-up albums and CDs.
Yes.
I didn't even know what some of my favorite comedians looked like. Mm-mm. Because it was before like YouTube really took off.
Right.
They weren't necessarily always big enough to get like a stand up special,
which was
on like
HBO.
An HBO.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you know, HBO used to only put out like 4 of those a year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wasn't one of them 4 motherfuckers, I was just like, I wonder what Russell Peters looks like. He's funny as hell. And then later down the line you see it. But now it feels like you said, even if you're producing it yourself, you need a visual element. Because people not just going with the audio no more.
Mm-mm.
I mean, we're bombarded with videos all day that we didn't ask for, you know,
yes,
constantly.
Agreed.
There's just videos popping in our lap that it's like, hey, I don't follow this person. I don't know. I keep telling you, I don't follow this person. They twerking. Instagram just sent it to me. I didn't solicit this, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why it knows that I would look at it more than 1 second. I don't know. But I didn't ask for this. So, you know, just dealing with the modern way of doing things. And then also, you know, I love comedy specials as well. But yeah, I do like that relationship to the material that an album gives you, and you get to use your imagination. And I remember stealing my dad's comedy albums and listening to them on the lowest possible volume and stuff, and talking to older people and them telling me the disappointment when they finally saw what Richard Pryor looked like, and you know,
oh, no!
stuff like that.
Yeah, man. I used to have like a collection of just CDs and stuff that got me through my work day when I had a job that I hated. And one part of the job was every Friday, I worked in accounting. And at the time, every Friday, we had to literally take physical checks, mm-hmm. fold them up.
I've done that before.
Mail and put them in envelopes to be mailed out to like businesses and shit. Mm-hmm. And it was two of us, me and my boy Pat. And it was an all day job.
Yes, sir.
And so, you know, you sit in a room with one motherfucker all day. You can't talk 8 hours. Like, it's just you'll choke each other to death. So I would bring in like sometimes we bring in music and stuff, but sometimes we just bring in like stand up specials. And like I still know those specials backwards and forwards because I listen to them so much.
Yeah.
And it is a different experience using your mind's eye to visualize the joke. To visualize like the delivery and also like writing wise, it hits differently when you can't act out. So your writing, like my favorite stand-ups ended up being people that write well. Cause I'm like, okay, that callback is more important to me than the act out because I can't see the act out. So but yeah, we definitely have switched into like a physical video society. I feel like now if you're not doing video, it's almost like you're doing a disservice to yourself. Did you produce this one yourself, or was there like a company that produced it? Like, how did that work?
I produced it myself. Basically, I was in talks with like a big streamer, and then they kind of pulled out at the last minute. Part of it was, you know, them talking to me before I felt like the material was ready. And so, you know, I don't like deadlines on comedy. I don't think comedy specials should be like, it's due this date, you know, whatever you got, put it out there. Like, that's not me. So when it was right, I came back to them. They said they didn't have the budget at the time. And then I was like, well, I'm going to figure out how to put this out myself.
Damn. And like, that, what was that process like? Because I think also being an artist, it's a different muscle to arrange production, you know, one of the good things about working for somebody or with somebody is, okay, I just need to show up and do my thing.
Right. People handle the other
stuff. Once it's like your money and your time and your business connections, then it's like, all right, the lighting gotta be right. You gotta find somebody you can trust to delegate things. Like, how difficult was that process for you?
I mean, honestly, it's just really, you know, the toughest thing is getting the vision expressed to the point where there aren't, you know, a lot of questions or a lot of room for different interpretations of what the goal is. And so, you know, I think a lot of the intentionality of the special shine through because there were a lot of conversations. I worked with the director, Michael Toomey, who is somebody that I could call up on the phone. You know, if I got Spike Lee, then it's like 3 weeks before we have a call. And now I got 30 questions and I might, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, not, you know, like I'm glad that I work with somebody that I could hit up at 3 o'clock and be like, hey, what do you think about this? Have you seen this special? What, you know, what kind of camera is this? All right. You know, I'll take it to my boy who directed a special, Mookie Thompson, and be like, yo, you know, what do you think about this? And so I was just constantly asking different people for help and you know, to figure out the best way to do it.
That's interesting too, because like stand-up is such a, like, in a way, solo. It's like everyone's a fucking mercenary, you know what I mean? Like everyone's kind of competition with everybody, everybody's whatever. But then like to put something out like that, it's a community situation, right? Because like everyone got their different expertise, you know what I'm saying? Motherfuckers got to be in your corner. They got to be, hey, this is the way you got to do this. This is how we going to film it. This is the club we need to do it. This is the camera setup. So, like, it is interesting to see, like, the community come together. Because whenever I see a stand-up special, especially one produced by the person themselves, I'm like, that's a group project that just got your name on it. But, it's too much shit for one person to do by themselves.
On the technical side, you know, it's got my name on it because of the art. But on the technical side, it's definitely a group project. And, you know, I think the individualism of stand-up, has caused there to be a lot of competition and people saying things about each other. And oftentimes in this game, we're pitted against each other. Mm-hmm. But I think that our best work comes from collaboration, whether it's in Living Color, whether it's Harlem Nights, whether it's Coming to America, whether it's Friday. I think when we work together, that's when we're at our best. Joe Torre said something to me last night that was very profound. He was like, all comedians are like, they all have a different instrument. And so you just got to play your instrument. And, you know, when it's your time for your solo, do your solo. But right. Know that, you know, there's a guitar player, there's a drummer, there's a, you know, and I think that's a beautiful way of looking at it.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think especially like in 2024, the idea of like the competition aspect and tearing each other down is like, it's peaking right now. Like that Cat Williams, Shannon Sharp thing. I feel like it changed the tenor of the game where people took things that were private to very public places and public places where there's no real like fact check, pushback, or checking with the other party. It's just like whatever they said, that's what happened.
Right. And it's a lot more to that because the way, as somebody on the outside looking in, y'all are coworkers at the end of the day. And it's like we all eventually have to work together, may cross each other's path. Like if you're in certain levels or you get to a certain status, y'all are gonna cross each other's paths. So I think that, you know, there is a time and a place for things like that, but maybe it's just me just being old school. It's like, hey, dog, if I meet this person, are they going to take it personally? If I meet this person, is it going to be on site?
We all have coworkers we hate no matter what job we have, but you're supposed to just come home and tell your girl.
Right.
Like, you
talk to your spouse about it.
I mean, I like some of the WWF-ness. I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't want it to go to a further violent place.
Right.
But I do like the, some of the WWE aspect of black comedy right now. It is exciting. And and also, we don't have a season, you know, so it's just never ending.
Season.
You know, just like WWE, there's no off season in WWE. I think certain acts should start getting theme music. And then when they walk in the club, here, you know, and then he just runs on stage and do some jokes. That would be cool. That would be extremely cool.
I'm here for that. I appreciate that. I think that would be a lot of fun. And like you say, if you're gonna do it, put it in joke form. You know what I'm saying? Like put it in that.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that.
Then when comedians do drop ins, like they could drop in on the people that don't fuck with them. So then, you know, then you could have that WWE aspect that, you know, like somebody's on stage, and then you just hear, there's no sex in the champagne room. No sex.
Oh, no! Chris Rock!
The humanity! but would you you have your own podcast.
15, a 30, a 45. Mike Epps has just walked on the stage! Yeah.
would you have your own podcast? Would you ever do this? Or do you ever think about like, man, the algorithm rewards the conflict, it rewards the controversy, you know, the next inconsistent podcast, you just hop on there and just let the chopper spray on everybody.
The algorithm rewards discussion. And you can spark discussion by being salacious. You can also spark discussion by being wrong. And I'm wrong a lot. So I would rather just feed the algorithm with people correcting me than starting a beef. I mean, there's some comics that I got beef with, but they not big enough yet. Like, I got to wait till they get bigger, and then I can really
y'all play
really
the long
start.
Game with your, you got to play your long game with your enemy.
Yes, with your beef,
That mean, like, you right now, you got to be rooting for your enemies. Like, you got to be like, man, I hope you get that
right.
Show.
I hope you get that special. Hope you get that spot, dog.
I hope you get on the platform and mention my name.
Yeah.
Right. Now I can't be the bad guy. Hey, he just retaliating. Rob was minding his own business. And then he comes.
then I'm justified in my actions.
Yeah, you do. Mm-hmm, you, mm-hmm. You said, you know, being wrong definitely moves the algorithm. And it does. It does. People love dunking on people that are wrong. You know, like some Twitter accounts will just share something and it'll be like, this potato looks like a donkey, but it obviously looks like a hippopotamus. And then everyone will be like, yo, this looks like a hippopotamus. And it'll go viral just mm-hmm. off of that interaction. And you mm-hmm. do have one rule on an inconsistent podcast, which is you never look anything up. So
you can't look anything up. It's just what's in our brain. I hate listening to podcasts and then people be like, hey, look that up real quick. And then they try to have an opinion. And it's like, I know you just learned that while y'all was cut out. I know you really don't have it inside you. You shouldn't be speaking on it, you know? So I just try to speak to people with what they really care about, what they really got on the inside, you know?
I love and have a good, I love fun, me. Fun time doing it. I love when somebody tells somebody look something up on a podcast, and the bigger shows can do it because they normally got like a guy.
Yes, like that's their whole job. It's like, yeah.
Hey, Ron, they can say that. But I love when they look something up and it's the opposite of what they said. Man, that makes me smile so hard when it's like,
that's
right, because mm-hmm, you get COVID, right? You get COVID from people with the vaccine shedding it on you, right? So anyway, well, look that up. And it's like, oh, man, no. Just wait 3 minutes. This motherfucker going to be wrong as shit.
Yeah, and the thing is,
being in front of danger, bro.
Roger is that person for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think also if you have a good fan interaction, I'm a person, I can't handle being wrong and then having 100 people tell me the same thing. Like, I'm okay if, like, one person hit me up like, hey, you know, that thing you said, it wasn't right. But when you got a lot of fans and it's social media, it's like 1,000 motherfuckers being like, hey, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, right? Cool, man. You didn't see the first 99 people that told me it was 4? I'm going to correct it next show.
They probably did not.
Yeah, it's hard.
They didn't see the first person. They didn't see the second person that was like, I came here to say this.
Yeah.
they didn't see none of that.
Hey, so how long did it take you to get them, you know, for you to feel comfortable with the material for this special? Like, I know you said you don't really like deadlines and stuff. So when did you know, like, all right, this time?
I started running it in 2021. I ran it in the Bay. I ran it in D.C. I ran it in Asheville. I ran it in Savannah. I feel like after those running shows, I kind of felt like comfortable with the material. And then I did like a dry run in LA, had some like big wigs come through and everything. And then, you know, they were championing for me. The people that saw it live were like, this is it. But, you know, it, you know, just wasn't throughout the building. And then, you know, at that point, I'm still growing. I'm still writing. I'm still performing. And so, you know I got it.
Right.
It's just, I guess I started working on it. Hazelpedia came out 2019, like the end of 2019. I started talking about it on stage a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I would say I was going to chicken out. I was going to, if we hadn't had a pandemic and I ain't had that time to like sit down and think and just appreciate the time and appreciate, right. You know, like the opportunity to even, you know, do a special and stuff. And I don't know if I would have did it. So
is that, you know, because of like perfectionism or like where does that come from? The idea of not putting it out.
Oh, not putting it out, just not exploring that side of not being vulnerable. You know, I think that like a part of me was like, I'm really not gonna just be silly, man. Just go up there and be silly. You know, and there's another part of me that's like, nah, you really never gonna be able to stand on your square unless you address what's pressing on the inside, that thing that if somebody else were to bring up and talk about, to ether you. And so it's basically me, you know, being like B Rabbit and owning my own truth, you know, before somebody else gets to it. I would never do a roast battle or any of those type of shows because my biggest fear was somebody like addressing something with me that I didn't feel comfortable with.
Yeah, I never understood the roast battles anyway because like I'll be watching them, they kind of real, like they kind of it's play, but also like the ones that hit hard be the ones that you be like, that's true.
It started as a joke, right? It started as a joke because of rap battle culture, but also because people felt like the one of the clubs out here was racist. And so they had a guy that was there, the all-time racist, and they were trying to impress the all-time racist through roasting. And then everybody would shoot at everybody. The host would shoot. The all-time racist would say racist stuff. The battlers would shoot at each other, but they could shoot at the host. They could shoot at the judges. But then it just got so big that it just became a whole nother thing. And then it got to the East Coast. When it got to the East Coast, there's such a hierarchy in stand-up on the East Coast that it's like you cannot shoot at the judges. You know, like the audience would turn on you if you shoot. How dare you? You're down here. You know, right. That type of thing. And they used it. They would dangle in front of us like, you can get into this club if you do a roast battle. That's a good way for the booker to see you, you know. And so it's like, I got to exploit one of my friends' trauma, and they got to exploit me so that we could get 5 minutes on the weekend.
Yeah,
that's really what we doing.
Yikes.
We really, you know, and then y'all gonna put it on y'all YouTube and monetize it and not break bread off of it. So then I'm for me to get a paid spot, for me to get a $15 spot, I gotta write all week. Right. I gotta do all this work. Expose stuff about myself that I might not want out there, and mess up my relationship with one of my closest friends. You know what I'm saying?
That's not what you visualized when you thought about getting into stand-up. Like,
right.
Whatever it was when you were like, man, I would like to do this.
Right. That was not on the agenda.
Destroy my friends and fuck up my
relationship. I know plenty of people that really... their friendships was different after they went down there and did that roast battle, you know?
I can imagine.
And yeah, I was just like, this is, I don't want to attract this crowd. The people who come and they're like, get them, kill them. Like, I don't want those people to be at my shows waiting on that moment. You know,
also, I have the other
observations about kites and stuff I need to talk about.
The other thing too is like, it's a skill that, I mean, it can be entertaining in that environment, but it's hard to build a career around, like being the roast guy. Because, like, when it's time to do your special, what, you going to bring out five other comedians? Now you got to do an hour of just shit, you know what I mean, about your life. And you can't just be like, oh, this nigga got a baby mama he don't be talking to. Like, that's not going to work. You from Atlanta. Did you get your start in stand up in Atlanta? Because I know you were in New York and now LA.
I started stand up in Atlanta. I actually started in Athens, Georgia while I was at the University of Georgia, and then going to Atlanta and driving all the way back to Athens my first year in the stand up. And then after that, I did like 5 years in the A. And then I moved to New York.
Now, did you were in school for political science at the time that you started stand up? Did you like finish school, or was it like, nah, I'm getting paid, this travel, it's all this shit, let me just go ahead and get in stand up?
Well, I wasn't getting paid off the rip like that. When I first started, you know, it was just figuring out how to get on stage, and also, I used the school. I would open for whoever came to the school. I would host every pageant. I would host every program. You know, I would perform at the poetry nights. So I was using the school for stage time. Plus, I only had a year left. I started basically when I turned 21. I looked young. No one was going to let me do stand up and be too young to be in a club. Nobody's gonna risk a liquor license on my baby face. So, you know, I definitely had to start at 21, you know. So
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Did you?
So
wait, hold up. Now you said you performed at the poetry nights. Was it poetry or comedy when it was the poetry nights?
So when I started, before I started doing jokes, yeah. I went to the poetry night. My first real time getting laughs on stage, I signed up for the open mic that was right after the poetry night. But I didn't have a poem.
Okay.
I made up a poem about what I saw in the poetry night.
Oh.
And I was getting like huge laughs because it's like he clearly just made this up. This is nuts. You know, he's making fun of people who just performed. Like, this is crazy. And so from that, people were calling me a comedian, but right. I hadn't done jokes yet. So that used to scare me. Yeah, I used to be worried, like, what if I suck at jokes? And then, you know, now I have this reputation of being a comedian. And so I was doing that for a while. I had a friend that was a comic. He'd bring me on stage. I'd do some little poems or whatever. And so I got in the game doing poetry. And then when I decided to try jokes, it was like, all right, I got to put the poems down. And really just, you know, just talk.
What was the transition between ATL and New York? Because those are like two different worlds. So like, what was the transition?
I mean, everything. I always put New York on a pedestal. So to me, I think I needed to just be there and really see what it was. And, you know, I think New York has a high ceiling for stand up. I think it's also got a low floor. There's some people that just think they're just going to move there and get it going. But New York respects a hustle, hard work. You know, they respect a good joke. They don't care about a lot of the fluff. Also, you're dealing with the elements. It's a lot of good comedy shows because it's crazy outside. Mm. People, you know, you walk somebody in a snowstorm, you terrible. They got to put on gloves. They got to put on a scarf. They got to put their hat back on. They got to find their coat. You know, like you get a little more leeway. People more excited to be inside and just laugh with each other in New York. And you know, it's the best when you're funny. And so going there and not being known and starting from zero and going up first on the shows that I was on and proving myself it's important. That's an important skill to have. And those are the skills that I bring in the auditions and interviews and everything else, because, you know, you got to learn how to just prove yourself.
How long were you in New York?
I was in New York 4 years.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's a good stint, especially like considering you basically had to start over again. Was it now when you were a comedian in your college and opening on campus and stuff, was that like being a celebrity on campus, or is it like something that where it's like it's a smaller knit community? So if you bomb, like, I got to see this nigga in the lunchroom. Like, what's that?
It's pressure to be new. You know, it's like the first time people see you, it's like no expectations. Right. And then it's like, oh my God, that was really good. That was really funny. But then it's like, all right, you're going to do something new. I seen what you did. You're going to, you know, and so there's that pressure. But then also, you know, there's not a lot. When I was in school, there wasn't a lot of people trying to do comedy. There wasn't a lot of people being like, forget this, I'm gonna be Steve Harvey. Like, you know, everybody else was like, they're trying to be a doctor, they're trying to be a lawyer, they're trying to be, you know, the president, they're trying to be whatever. Why I said the three most basic jobs, all kind of, right, all kind of
majors.
They
try to be a fireman.
Right, they're trying to be.
They're trying to be somebody.
Yeah, a superhero, like, you know, yeah. They're just trying to, you know, like,
we ain't got time for these jokes.
Jobs, you know?
Astronaut, you know. Did political science help you in any way with, you know, your career? Or is that just one of those things where you like, man, I went to school for that, but I don't use it?
It helps me a little bit. I think that I have an interest in politics, and sometimes on stage I venture off into politics. Also, I think that I'm not trusting, like some people, they'll get their information from one place. I think I know, some of the tactics that are used in media. And so I'm not necessarily fooled all the time by some of those. And I feel like misinformation has just gone crazy since then. When I was in school, a lot of these outlets could be trusted more, and you felt like there were checks and balances and stuff. And, it's not necessarily that way.
Yeah, we used to have tentpole media. And while it was gatekept, obviously, that there's downfalls to all that shit. But I feel like, in a way, we were promised democratization through social media and through the internet and all these startups and shit. But now it feels like people live in different realities with their own facts.
Yes, they do.
And so, do you experience that if you try to veer into something political on stage, where, because I think, to me, jokes work when everyone at least has an understanding of the general, okay, if I were to say, oh man, LeBron James scored 40,000 points this weekend, this nigga's been playing ball, blah, 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 this long, right? Everyone, we agreed that he scored 40,000 points, you know what I'm saying? But if I'm like, yeah, Joe Biden going for a re-election, and motherfuckers, and half the room is like, he didn't win no motherfucking last election. It's like, oh, shit. what's happening right now?
Right. No, there's some of that for sure. I think the biggest thing of that was traveling and talking about COVID. Because everybody, even if they were home for 2 weeks, they weren't admitting that it was a pandemic.
Right.
So like one of my first shows that I got out of the pandemic was in Arizona. And they were like, and half of my jokes at that point were COVID related, pandemic related material. And then I get on stage and they're like, it's a plandemic. And I'm like, oh no. What am I going to do? What am I going to talk about? This is all I've been thinking about. I was scared. I thought the world was ending, and the people here are just on a totally different type of time. Mm-hmm. I try to play the middle when it comes to politics.
You're making jokes about yeah, man, I'm finally leaving the house. They're like, we was never in the house.
Yeah, we was always outside.
Right. What are you talking about? Masks and droplets and stuff? What are you talking about? Get this scientist off the stage. I'm trying to have a good time.
Fake news.
Yeah.
No, that's crazy, man. I feel like that's changed over time. And then also social media's kind of changed, right? Because when you were in college, I'm sure, obviously social media was a thing. But now I feel like, you got to chase the algorithm and find your niche. There's I made these jokes for Black History Month where I was highlighting the coons of Black history that don't get shout outs. And on Twitter, crickets. On TikTok, motherfuckers, they're loving it. On Instagram, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like that's part of the job now, too. Is that something you're finding, because I follow you also on TikTok, and you're always in my feed with clips from the Inconsistent Podcast. But is that a choice it's almost like another job you have to add on top of being a stand-up? How have you worked with that?
Yeah, no, my last job before I became full-time was I was an editor, and I was like, I'm never going to have to cut videos again. I'm going on the road. I don't need this. And, jokes wake me up in the morning. I don't wake up in the morning to edit videos, And now, every morning I'm waking up to edit a video because I need to get the jokes out.
Yeah.
And, it's like, stand-up, I always was like two full-time jobs. I always was like managing what you do on stage and trying to get on stage and trying to stay booked, you know, that. And now it's like a whole nother aspect when it comes to social media and posting and stuff. And I don't know if it's healthy. I don't know if it's good. You know, the algorithm be playing with me a lot of times. I don't know if I'm shadow banned or what. Because they'll show me. They'll be like, well, 20,000 people saw this. 19,000 of them are your followers. And it's like, all right, well, that's not my job to show it to people I don't know. That's your job.
Right, yeah.
Y'all done showed it to everybody I know. When y'all going to start showing it to people I don't know?
And they do that bullshit, too. Like, I know my TikTok does this, where it's always trying to get me to pay for something. Where it'd be like,
trying to get you,
you
to
know,
pay.
If you want more people to see it, you can sign up for the such and such program for this much money. I'm like, not, nope. But... I thought the promise of logging in and creating content was that you do that. Like,
right.
You go find the people. Facebook did the same thing. Our podcast, we have a podcast Facebook page. We used to put something out and literally just strangers, you know, people that, oh man, first time seeing this, man, this is dope. I'm going to check this show out.
But not no more.
Then one day they like just cut, they like cut the faucet off. And it's like, you put some shit out, maybe the people that follow you see it.
Okay, not, and that's a maybe.
Not even a guarantee. Maybe. And then like a week later, they start sending us like, hey, you know, if you want to pay to promote this. I'm like, I'm not, you got me. You.
I'm like, y'all used to pay me.
Right.
Y'all don't remember when I worked there? Like, I got emails that said, y'all used to pay me. What? Like, what? Why I got to pay y'all now? Are y'all okay? Are y'all okay? I can't be the business model. I can't.
Do you ever feel pressure to do like crowd work? Because I know that's what the thing that's going viral for the last like year or so. I feel like the crowd work clip's been blowing up and it's a way not to burn your material or whatever. Do you ever feel like that pressure of like, let me do some crowd work?
I don't feel pressure, but I do crowd work, but I don't ask the same questions that you could have asked somebody in 1987. You know, like I try to ask different questions. Like I ask people what their favorite dinosaur is. You know? Like I figure out different questions to ask people, and then get. You can find out a lot about a person through a question, but it doesn't have to be. Where do you work? Oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, where are you from? You know, it don't got to be that. Like, you know, we done been through a lot, seen a lot as a shared experience. You know, I've been asking people where their computer was in their house growing up. That'd tell me everything I need to know. Everything I need to know about just where was the computer in your house growing up. You know, that lets me know about your upbringing.
Yeah, if they had a computer at the house. Space.
Right, right. And if they're gonna talk about that or not in front of people, you know, there's a lot you can learn from that. So I'm asking people all kind of stuff and finding different ways to have that experience, because I am funny. I can be in the moment. I can be present. I'm not, you know, I just come with things I already want to say.
Yeah,
I come with things that are, you know, already have a show planned for you guys, but you know, some people come and they want to be played with, and I'll play with them for a little while, and then we got to put the toys down and get back to work.
On the latest episode of the Inconsistent Podcast, you were talking about how people used to like come out the house for preparation, and that's how I grew up. Like, I'm coming to see this comedian because they are professional that worked on everything. And I feel like it is more, and I wonder how much of that is also kind of social media, because like, you know, now everyone even fakes. We're now at a point where motherfuckers do like fake arguments with their girlfriend to go viral. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's so obvious and fake, but like they're trying to sell you on like, this was a spontaneous moment that I found out. I just happened to be recording and I found out my son wasn't mine. And now I'm gonna put this on the internet, and you know it's fake. And same thing with like, not that crowd work is fake, but the idea of like, you know, someone who loves stand up, the idea is essentially, I don't want to burn my material.
Right.
But here's an easy way to say like something funny. And you're right. The premises are normally, where do you work? Y'all on a date? You know, that kind of
y'all
thing.
Y'all on a date? Yeah.
So it is. It did change like within our lifetime, I believe, of leaving the house because this person worked on something and they're going to show us the fruit of that labor versus, hey, man, get out here and dance. Hump that chair.
Well, see, I was going to get at, I feel like what happened was we started shaming the tap dancers. You know, we allowed Xavion Glover to be the only tap dancer accepted. And so, you know, you had to practice tap dancing. If you ever as a kid saw somebody tap dancing, saw, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. or somebody on you know, yeah, Gregory Hines on TV, and you start tapping with your church shoes on, you see how hard it is, and then, you know, your parents be like, if you want to tap dance, you're going to have to practice.
Right.
You're going to have to practice, you know, and really we let the smart guy be the last person to tap dance, and now people don't respect practicing, they don't respect preparation, because we out here tap dance shaming.
That's facts.
And so, Chris Brown, if you want to get back in good graces with the people,
know what you need to do.
You're going to have to put them taps on them shoes, man, and get the culture back.
Put them shoes on. I 100% agree. And me, similar to Roderick, and maybe this is just the old woman in me, I don't mind crowd work, but it needs to be funny, because I'm like, I paid. I didn't pay for you, nigga. Nobody know who you are. I paid for the person on stage to tell their jokes.
I will laugh. I will sometimes get a laugh, though, out of a comedian that gets ready to get into some crowd work and then realize it ain't going to be funny and then try to get back into their bit.
Right,
that's more of a me laughing as a fan of like, oh, I know what you tried to do.
Yeah, this,
you know
what I'm like, the awkward moment. Yes.
It's like, oh, man. So where was I at, man? tables.
Yeah.
Tables. Trash. Yeah, man. So y'all be moving a table. You're like, oh, nah. That person works at NASA. You didn't have nothing for that. You ran out of shit.
You wouldn't really prepare.
I love a good scientist. When a scientist in the crowd, that's when I turn up. That's when I get excited. Because I be having a lot of questions.
Yeah. Many questions. And also the thing is, because me and Roger like comedy, I like to see like inexperienced people go up there and like do their time too, because we had went to a restaurant one time and they did like an open mic. We was eating and then all of a sudden somebody just started telling jokes in the middle of our dinner. So we looked up, we was like, oh, I guess we about to have live joke time.
I'm like, yeah, I don't know why you would do that to comedians.
We weren't prepared.
Because I feel like it's bad for the comedians, because you didn't tell people stand-up was happening.
Right.
So we just there eating like sushi or some shit, and then they busted out a stand-up show in the middle of the sushi, and the crowd wasn't receptive at all. Like, the crowd was very much like, yeah, so I was telling you like at work, and this motherfucker spilled. One dude drove from Ohio to Charleston, South Carolina to be there, and I mean, the amount of nothing that he was getting from that audience, I mean, we laughed, but it wasn't good. It wasn't a laugh from a good place.
Yeah Me and Roger was having a ball. Like, we were having getting our lives, and everybody else like, you interrupting my dinner.
Us stand-ups, we love when y'all get y'all food. Like, if like I'm about to go up and then you just got your food, it's like, all right, cool. They can't leave.
They can't leave.
I'm about to crack them while they get.
It's going
to
take 10 minutes to get through them chicken wings and nachos.
Man, I put my motherfucking food down and gave them my full attention.
We did. We stopped.
I said, I'm going to watch 100% of this bomb.
That
you know
is
what
nice.
I mean? That was nice. So also, man, so like I said, ATL, NYC, now you're in LA. How long you been in LA, first of all?
It will be 5 years in June.
Okay. You got a preference? Like, which one did you like the most? Do you like, you know, in your head, are you like, one day when this is all over, I'm going to retire in Atlanta or Athens, Georgia? Like, what do you prefer to say?
I have thoughts like that. I don't know. Home is changing so much that sometimes, you know, I do wonder if I go back, how, you know, what will I be going back to at this point in my life, and what it would be like I would say from a stand-up perspective, I miss different things. I miss Atlanta. I miss the ability to talk to people that look like me whenever I want, you know, and not having to schedule, okay, I'm going to get to do a black night in 3 weeks, you know. Hopefully they want to hear what I got to say about what I saw in the Shade Room this week, you know. It will be perfected in 3 weeks, you know. New York, I love the stage time. I love the camaraderie with the comedians. I feel like, you know, there's so much to do in New York, and it's a real fun time. LA, I think I like the lifestyle. I like the possibilities. You know, you could literally do a show with Judd Apatow out here. You could literally, you know, Kenya Burris might pop up and be, you know, somewhere where you're at out here. So it's just like, okay, the ceiling for comedy is high out here. The ceiling for stand-up, you know, it's real narrow as far as the people who just can perform every night. But you could, you know, make it in comedy on a higher level here. So I'm appreciative of that. I try to go back to New York as much as I can. I go back to Atlanta frequently, but they all have something to offer for sure.
Is they say Black Hollywood is small. Is it?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I think like the six, there might be 3 degrees of separation, you know, like, you know, especially if you're out here long enough, eventually you've rubbed elbows with somebody that's rubbed elbows. You know, I've definitely dapped up somebody that's hugged Angela Bassett. You know, I haven't been anywhere near Angela Bassett, but I've definitely, you know what I'm saying, dapped up somebody that, you know, was like, Angela did the thing, and she was like, come here, baby, you know, for sure.
It's like, we both know Issa Rae, if you think about it, you know right? what I mean? Through osmosis.
Right. Like, you know, yeah. I have most celebrities I care about, I have the connection I'm going to make to talk to them longer than just, you know, I'm a big fan.
Right.
Because at first, you just introducing yourself as big fan. I'm big fan. They're like, all right, I'm so-and-so. And then they just walk away. But yeah, that comes third. Now it's like, oh, you know, so and so. I saw you with so and so, man. We used to work together, man. Okay. Me and so, you know, blah blah blah. Man, remember we was on that one Zoom for that thing one time? You know, like, yeah, I'm in that. Yeah. And then it's like, also, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, know? Right. Also, you used to have a podcast, Book of Ye podcast, centered around Kanye West. Would you, and then you ended it abruptly for no reason, really.
For no reason?
I don't know why. I seemed like everything was going good, and then just one day episodes stopped coming out. Would you ever start a podcast centered around another celebrity, you know, since you did that?
Sure. A deceased celebrity. Jimi Hendrix, Prince, Bob Marley, Freddie Mercury, you know, William Shakespeare, Mozart, Wolfgang, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I got to do a pod about somebody named Wolfgang, you know what right. I'm saying? But
come on,
like,
Wolfgang? Okay.
Yeah.
You got to make it, you got to make it somebody that all the fucked up shit they've done has been done already.
Yes, and no new shit.
And no new shit could surface. You know what I mean?
Right. I would never tether my career to another living person who can speak in a microphone and say whatever.
How scared were you? Because, like, first of all, man, like, I think. Obviously, the Kanye stuff got so wild by the end, I don't think anyone's defending him. But there was like a period where it was like, man, he just going through something. Like, right. maybe, like,
it
like.
Was a game. Yeah. It was a game. He was George Bush. I was Stephen Colbert. It was the Colbert Report. I was playing a game. I was playing a character. No matter what Kanye does, he can do no wrong. That's the rules of my character.
Right.
And then he starts doing stuff where I'm like, man, my family's asking me questions. Blacks for Trump are coming to my shows.
Oh, no.
You know, like people trying to get me to put the hat on.
Oh, no.
I'm like, first of all, y'all didn't know I was kidding. And second of all, it's like, I didn't know we'd be here.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That took a turn. But, what was the day you said, all right,
now we
it.
Look great, because we jumped out at the Slavery Was a Choice hat era. Mm-hmm. That's when we was like, all right, we out. And then the other podcasts kept going.
Right.
He started following them. They started getting all the press, Rolling Stone articles, all kind of stuff. I'm looking like, did we do the right thing? You know, Chris, right. he just like, no, we good. I'm done. I'm out.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, after the tirades now and everything that's been going on, it, you know, we look like we made the right decision. Because the last thing I want to do is get on from making fun of somebody that's unwell.
Right, because he's unwell.
That's been my thing, because, like, I got so many requests to add him to the Coon calendar. And I won't do it, but it's because I really think we know he has mental health issues and you don't treat him. So, and when he was medicated and treating him, he wasn't talking like this. Like, he might have been what people consider to be an asshole, but it was like asshole in like the way a lot of people are assholes. Like, oh yeah, he kind of is a womanizer or whatever. Like, it wasn't like, you know, and Rosa Parks never happened. You're like, that doesn't sound like you understand facts.
Right.
So, like, I never added them because of that. And yeah, it does get to that feeling where his behavior was so outlandish. If you keep the show going, it's almost like you just being like, fuck it, it's content. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Oh, man.
It's a dude I follow on YouTube, and he is like super into the Yeezys, and he be doing Yeezy updates, but he be looking so sad, like, I really just was in the shoes.
Yeah. Right? I was here for the shoes. That's all I was
I
here
really
for.
Was here for the shoes. Now I'm here for the socks, I guess.
Right.
You know.
And Kanye make it impossible, too, because, like, he'll be like, my next shoe's going to have Klan hoods on them. You like, fuck, I can't.
I can't even buy them, dog.
I can't. Right.
Like, I know I'm a collector.
It'd be a meme, and it'll be like, these shoes were worn by blah, 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 100 years ago. And it's like, I don't even know if this is true.
Right.
If that was on the mood board or not, but now I can't unsee it.
Dude, could you imagine a collector? You know how they be having, like, shoes in a box. All of a sudden, they have certain spots that are empty. And they feel like the Kanye's, and they just have like a tear or a sad emoji right. across them, or they just describe what the shoe would have been.
Man, that was like super sad. And then, like, what really bums me out with Kanye is whenever there's a video that's posted, and there's still a room full of people in there just like co-signing just to be in proximity of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, y'all niggas are evil. Something wrong with you. Like, if that was just my friend, just my homie, if my friend Justin started talking like that, I'd be like, all right, Jay, let's maybe turn the Instagram Live off. Maybe we don't put that out right now. But they really be in the room like, I'm trying to come up off this shit. But I think that really just says a lot about society and where the fuck we are. You also are in two of our favorite shows.
Mm-hmm.
Southside and Sherman Showcase.
Yes!
How did that come about, man? Like, what was that like?
Sherman's came about, I met Diallo Riddle, and then he met me at a time where I hadn't worked on a show before. I had sold a couple scripts, but hadn't, you know, really been staffed yet. I've been applying for years, and he gave me my first opportunity, and in there, you know, because of that show, my IMDb says I'm a composer. You know, it's like, yeah, I got to work on songs, I got to work on sketches for, you know, really the first time, and got to play characters.
Morris, you know, Day.
Me trying to. Mm-hmm. me trying to push a sketch, I, you know, did my Morris Day impression, and they were like, you gonna play Morris Day. Like, in my head, I was just gonna coach whoever they were gonna pick, and, you know, so, and I mean, that opened so many doors for me and everything, and so many opportunities. I met so many people through that job, so, and then I physically wasn't on Southside, but my voice was. There's season 2 and season 3. They needed a voice for different things. So my voice has been on Southside, but Diallo and Bashir are definitely two mentors that I'm so glad I met in the game.
Yeah, man. One is super important for people to like hook people up that way, because like the game is still nepotistic, man. It's still like who you know at the end of the day. And a lot of times motherfuckers just put on whoever looks like them or whatever. And you can toil in uncertainty because like, it's not like LinkedIn. You like, how do you apply for a writer's room? It depends. Did they let you know? Do you got an agent that's in the know?
Right.
Do somebody know you that can like be like, oh, make sure we definitely get his submission? Cause if not, man, you really, like you said, you were applying for years. And also like a lot of times you don't even get like a hit back. Like at least if you apply for a job at Bank of America, you get like a, hey, we decided to go with another candidate. The writer's room, you just look up and be like, oh, I guess that show's on. Shit, I guess I didn't get it.
Packet made it to the show.
Yeah.
You'll see a commercial for the show and be like, oh, man, I pitched that segment. That's crazy. All right. I guess they could do it without me. All right.
That's hilarious, dude. Oh, man. I hate
that. Somebody definitely read my packet because it's right there. It's made it to the commercial. That means,
they knew my shit was hot. They advertised
it. They just didn't want me.
I hate to ask this question because I think it's the number one question that all creatives dread, but I got to ask. Are you already?
You don't have to. You really don't.
I gotta, as a journalist, I have to do my due diligence. I wrote all this shit down.
Okay. You a journalist? Yeah, now. I got you.
are you already thinking about the next album, the next project? Like, are you already onto that, or even though this one just came out?
No. The next one is gonna deal with my journey with love and relationships. Tentatively titled The Big Valentine, but that might change. So TBV might be TBD. But I think it's going to be like something hopefully that's more global. I do want to go to more places around the world and do comedy. And I know sometimes some of the referential stuff that I lean on, you can't, you know, outside of the United States. So I do want to talk about some themes that are more universal and get into love and relationships and hopefully work it out, you know, in other countries other than the US.
So, cause you just got engaged, right?
Yeah. She said, yes, I'm engaged.
Did you do it for the material? Because you was like, all right, the next album need to be about love, so...
No. I got engaged because I'm in love, not because of the material. She just walked in. She's looking at me like I'm crazy.
You're like, man, I need another half hour. Shit. I can either have kids or...
I don't know if our relationship is gonna be in it, but definitely the journey to how I got to that place is going to be.
Is that ever a thing where it's like the stuff that you have in your relationship and your personal stuff and how you choose to bring it to the stage? Is that like a, all right, let me run this joke by you situation, or... this is all off limits. Like, how do you balance that?
Right now I haven't really, it hasn't really been a thing. I've just been kind of not talking. You know, I guess I've been talking in live shows about it, but I haven't really thought about commodifying some of those aspects. So sometimes I will have a thought and I will have a joke, but I, you know, those aren't necessarily to be clipped up and you know, put on a project or something, but you know, it depends. When it's time to have that conversation, I might, but I haven't yet.
Okay. Well, if you get in an argument, just pull out a paper, start writing down something and just see how she responds to it. Well, listen, Rob, this has been fun.
You made him laugh. I don't think that's a good idea, baby.
Yeah, I don't know, don't you
listen to that man.
So you like to pull the toilet tissue from under the roll. All right. That's cool. Nah, it's not. You see it on stage. But yeah, yo, thank you for coming through, man.
Thank you, sweetie.
Everybody,
thanks for having me.
Yo, tell everybody, like, if you got any like stand up coming up for people to like check out, like where they need to go. Live.
Yeah. If you in the New Orleans area, I'll be in Lafayette, Louisiana, and then New Orleans, the 14th, 15th, and 16th of April. Also, if you're in Los Angeles on a Saturday, come to Echo Park. I'm at Stories in Echo Park most Saturdays when I'm in town. And then also, just look out. I'll be on the road. Listen to the album. It's on all streaming platforms. You know, if you really rock with it, download it. I think I get a little more if you download it. I definitely get more if you buy it. You know, you can still do that. Kick it old school, buy it. If you want to watch it, if you're one of those weird creeps that likes watching people, then watch it on YouTube. You know?
All my creeps out there, you know what it is. You know who you are. Line it up. Leave comments on the YouTube video. Like, what's her name? Thank you for being here, Rob.
Thank
man, this
you,
is so
sweetie.
Fun. You got to come
was.
Back, man. We've
Please.
Been fans.
I'm down to come back. Yeah, you know. You
come back next time. This was like an introductory to the audience interview style, but. Normally, we'd be on here cutting up, playing games, reading news stories,
yeah, we play games.
And shit like that.
Okay.
So next time you come back, we're going to do that.
What y'all play? Y'all play spades?
We play Guess the Race. That's where we read news articles. Guess the race of the people involved. We play this game called Fucking with Black People. Matter of fact, wait, you got like 20 minutes, right? Let's do two games.
I do.
We do two games. We got music and everything. All right. Let's do a little bit of Fucking with Black People with Rob Hayes. Let me pull up my Fucking with Black People music. And where's the short version? There we go.
We're just fucking with them people because they black. We're just fucking with them people because they black. We're just fucking with them black people. We're just fucking with them blacks. We're just fucking with black people. Hey, do
was that take six? Who is that?
That's my man Felt Five, fan of the show and a professional rapper and singer.
Yeah,
he's amazing.
He's great. What were you going to say before he pushed play?
Oh, I was just going to say shout out to the people in the comments that said they like me on Sherman Showcase. And
yeah.
And,
they, some
know,
of them already watched the special.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, some of them have already watched the special.
Yeah.
So, fucking with black people, this is the way it goes. I'm going to read an article. We're going to score it on how much we feel fucked with as black people. And the scores are in intervals of 25. So 25, 50, 75, 100. And if it's over 100, like you so fuck with you so bad, we say Dracarys, like Game of Thrones. You just burn it all down. All right.
Mm-hmm. Like Daenerys and.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
You know, all the people, all them Targaryens with them hood names.
You know what it
yes.
is.
Yes.
CBS sued by SEAL Team Scribe over alleged racial quotas for hiring writers. Brian Binnaker, a script coordinator on the show, who claims heterosexual white men need extra qualifications to be hired on network shows, is represented by a conservative group founded by Trump administration alum Stephen Miller.
What?
Yeah, he's suing because they hiring too many black people, women, and stuff, and it's hard out here for a straight white man to even get a job in the industry.
But ain't they like most of the industry? The fuck we talking about?
Oh, so you want to use facts? So we just throwing facts in this now? We just
I'm sorry.
Gonna go by the actual numbers of people that's employed and represented. Right.
Hello,
and just go by the fact that white men are still disproportionately employed by the industry more than anybody else.
They clip everybody else.
Wow,
about 2-1.
All right then. Well, they're trying to get this to go to the Supreme Court. He says that he was denied a staff writer job after the implementation of an illegal policy of race and sex balancing that promoted the hiring of less qualified applicants who were members of more preferred groups.
They love to pull that when most of the time the quote unquote others are probably more qualified than you are.
Well, they always say that if there's a quota or there's any level of like affirmative action, they always act like they literally went on the street, looked out and was like, hey, you black guy, you want a job? And then they just bring a guy in that's never done any work before. And it's just like, I guess I write comedy now. And that's not how it works. But that's how they in these lawsuits is how they treat it. We've kind of seen this playbook before. But how much does it fuck with you as a black person, Karen? 0 to 100.
Oh, just because of Jacaris, because the whole thing is pointless to me. Is one of those things with these facts aren't true. You just feel a certain way. And something that white people need to understand, sometimes y'all motherfuckers are mediocre and you don't want to admit you are mediocre being white. And there are other people that outqualify you for the job, but your ego tells you that whiteness is right. And if anybody that gets the job, if they ain't white and they ain't me, it's a problem with it.
All right. What about you, Rob? You've been a writer.
Right. I'm currently a writer. So, I got to be careful with this one. I'm going to say a 50 because I do think there are some programs for, hiring certain positions. And those programs, are severely flawed, in my opinion, because I know people who have been put in those positions and then been fired because the way the game is designed, after a certain amount of years, you have to move up. They didn't want these people of color moving up. So instead of, they fired them, then they can't get one of these diversity higher positions again because they already did it before. So now they've left entry level and now they're in a higher ranking position, but they can't get hired in that position.
Damn.
So that's kind of messed up. I do think it is. I think it's dangerous. I think that some of these programs, when they get it right, are very helpful, and they counterbalance for some of the, some of us didn't go to Northwestern. Some of us didn't have the same connection. Some of us didn't be in position to be in some of these rooms. And so I think that's why these programs exist. And also, why are you hating on the one black dude in the SEAL Team 6 room? He got to go through enough.
Yeah,
right? He got to go through enough. Right. I can't even imagine what they're saying at the break room of the SEAL Team 6 room. You know what I'm saying? The people that write this show about the Marines, I don't even know what they're talking about. The pretend Marines? Come on, man.
They made them head write the one episode about, like, after George Floyd, when they got to do that one very special episode. They all looked at him like, you got this, right? And he was like, I just wanted to write about, saving some children in Cambodia.
I just look up scopes in my spare time. This ain't about the scopes today, man.
I give it a 75. And the reason I give it a 75 is not even really about him, the program, or the black people that work there. I blame the fucking white people who know these motherfuckers don't be good enough to get it, and then they gotta make them feel good in the rejection letter, like, hey, if it was up to me, I'd give it to you. It's just they're making me hire the black guys.
That's what they tell them.
That's not what the fuck happened. That dude's not good enough. When it's black people, they don't never tell us no shit like that. They just be like, you're not good enough, and you didn't get the job, or you look on TV, the show is airing and they're showing a commercial with your joke that you wrote in your packet on it, and you like, god damn, I gotta accept that, like, I'm not good enough knowing that y'all use my shit. So I feel like it's the people that give the excuses that keep making these motherfuckers feel like they can sue somebody.
I agree.
Right, because how do you know that? How do you know the reason you didn't get in is because they had to hire a black person unless somebody told you that?
Come on.
Because I've applied for a lot of jobs, I've never got a breakdown of where I rank among the people who work there and the people who don't. I never got that. Like, hey, you was right here, you know. But you know, this lady's last name Disney, so you know we had to pick her. She Walt Disney's great niece.
All right, we got time for one more game. This time we're gonna go to guess the race.
Yay!
Okay.
This time for guess the race.
Guess the race. This is where we go around the globe, find different articles, and guess the race of the people involved. Today's contestants will be Karen and Rob Hayes. And the chat room plays along, and they're all racist, so just be on the lookout for their guesses. Today's article, a theft investigation at a fast food restaurant in Madisonville leads to three arrests.
Okay.
Now, the people that were arrested are all the same race. Okay. Just letting you know now. Investigators with the Madisonville Police Department say they were called to a McDonald's on North Main Street on February 21st to take a theft complaint. Police say they developed Michelle Brown as a suspect through employee timesheets, video surveillance at the restaurant, and safe entry logs, and discovered that she had stolen over $4,400, which is only like three value meals at this point. That's not
that's not a lot.
Not that much theft in the McDonald's anymore. Through the investigation, police say they went on to serve a search warrant at Brown's room at the Days Inn on Monday. While serving the warrant, police say Jack Mullins jumped out of the second story window and tried to run before being taken into custody with meth on him.
Oh!
They say they learned that Mullins had two warrants for his arrest at the time. Authorities say they also found Haley DiNapoli inside the hotel room and that she had drugs on her. Police searched the hotel room. They found meth, synthetic marijuana, and drug paraphernalia. And when questioning Brown about the money stolen from McDonald's, police say she admitted to stealing the cash, but that she had spent it all already, probably on those drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They were all arrested and booked into the Hopkins County Jail. Karen, guess the race of, let me see if it says all their full names. It's Michelle Brown and Jack Mullins and Haley DiNapoli.
Oh, white.
Kara's going with white for
everybody's
this one.
Everybody's white.
Rob?
Okay, Michelle Brown does sound like a black name. I feel like I probably know several Michelle Browns in my lifetime. Volume one. Now, DiNapoli, I don't really know us to really, you know, and then Chris Mullin.
Jack Mullins, yeah.
What's his? Yeah. Jack Mullins?
Yeah.
Okay, so we already know about Chris Mullin. You know what I'm saying? He was the captain of the Warriors Athletic St. John's. This dude jumped out the window with the meth. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say he white with a buzz cut.
Okay. All right. Now, they're all the same race, Rob. So I don't know.
Oh, they are the same race. All the same okay. race. Okay, well then, yeah, well then, all right, it's a different Michelle Brown, maybe from the Murphy Brown side of things. I'm going white.
Rob's going white. The chat room says Haley, Mullins, and Meth, definitely white. McMeth, white. Jumping from the second floor, Jason Bourne, white. Sounds methy, white. Florida Thruple, white. What can Brown do for you, white? Do black people use meth? Some of them have to. Three's Company Rewinds, white. I Am the Danger, white. And white, the correct answer is everyone said the same thing, and you all got it right. They were white.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll show you their picture in the chat room. Keep in mind, this one dude jumped out of the second story, and I think he landed on his face.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. I don't know if I want to. Okay.
Not looking too. Yeah. Not looking too good for the homie. Yeah. Probably should have just.
Nah.
Oh, no. And, them knees gave out.
And keep in mind, he still ended up going to jail. So, like, you just fucked your face up for nothing.
His face took the bulk of that
All right, and there's one last thing that we do every episode, and that's warn the world about swords. This is a very long sound effect, Rob. It takes about 30 seconds. All right, we have to warn the world because there's a lot of swords out here in the world, and we're all focused on guns. But we're never going to stop guns if we won't even stop swords. And there's not enough legislation against swords and not enough of us trying to control them and make them safe. A man who was shot and killed last month after authorities say he charged deputies while carrying a sword has been identified.
Okay.
Devin Lewis, 23, was shot at 10 p.m. February 24th. Deputies say they found him outside of a hotel. He was yelling and waving a sword. He was shot by Deputy Ramon Morales when he pulled the sword from his sheath and ran towards deputies.
Sheath.
Yeah, normally they don't have a sheath.
Mm-mm.
Shout out to him for accessorizing. he died at the scene. Morales, who has been with the department about a year, was not injured. As usual, the multi-age, they investigated it and to make sure that it was a, I guess, clean shooting or whatever. But once again, listen, if a motherfucker is yelling outside of your hotel and it's 3 a.m. and they got a sword, call the police because they the only ones that are going to know what to do with them. Because y'all, like, we've seen too many of these stories where the citizens took it into their own hands. Now you dead. And this motherfucker is going to get shot by the police anyway. So be careful out there. Mm-hmm. Don't sell these things at the flea mall. Mm-hmm. Don't sell these at the Comic Cons.
No.
They're dangerous. And you're literally putting someone's life in your own hands when you give them these swords. Rob, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, baby. Thank you for playing the games with us.
Hey. Come back. We'll be silly.
I'm down to come back, man. RP to that dude that went out like Indiana Jones. But yeah, I would love to come back, you know?
Absolutely, man. All right, y'all. No show tomorrow for the regular folks. Premium people, we're doing Balls Deep Sports tomorrow.
Okay.
And that'll wrap up the week. So until next time, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.